Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Nick Kieser here with you on this Wednesday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Ben McKee from Go Vols 24/7. Ben, good morning. How are we doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Hope you all are as well. And I appreciate y'all having me on.
Yeah, appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Ben, obviously, pretty awesome weekend in Knoxville with Tennessee advancing to the College World Series for the third time in the last four seasons. How do you view, I guess, the way that this went down against Evansville, and particularly after losing in game two to come back and just have the dominant performance they did in game three? What did that tell you about this Tennessee team and how well positioned they are to handle maybe some potential adversity when Omaha comes around?
Yeah, absolutely. It told me something, or reinforced, I think is the better word from my perspective, of something that I've thought all season. Like, obviously, this baseball team has a ton of talent, especially at the plate, arguably the best offense in the country. The statistics would suggest that it is the best offense in the country. And the pitching staff isn't quite what it has been the last couple of seasons, but it's still been pretty good and has been really good at times. But there's certainly more depth with the offense. And they've had to piece things together with the pitching staff, and you kind of saw the pitching staff melt down in game two with Drew Beam and Nate Snead not pitching their best game, and that allowed Evansville, a really good Evansville offense, to shock the college baseball world there and a lot of people in Knoxville and force a game three that I don't think really anybody thought was going to happen. But what I thought all season long, despite that talent that I just mentioned, I think the best trait about this team is its ability to battle through adversity and just kind of smile in the face of it and spit in the face of it, however you would like to describe it. They don't get phased too often. And if they do get phased, or if they do kind of go into a shell, it's usually for a couple of innings. Like you saw on Saturday, they jump out to a lead, and then Evansville kind of swung back with a big right hook, and it stunned Tennessee there for a couple of innings. And even though Tennessee lost, they were still able to regroup towards the end of the game and nearly came back in the top of the ninth inning and pulled off the comeback win. So I think that's the best trait about this team, is its grittiness and its toughness and its belief and confidence. And I think because of that, they are not fazed by adversity, which is a good thing, because as you mentioned, at some point in Omaha, if they're going to make it to the championship series, if they're going to win a national championship, they are going to get hit with adversity. And yep, I think this team is well equipped to handle it.
So, Ben, obviously in the immediate aftermath of the game, you know, Vitello goes on his 6.5-minute rant about success and covered a lot of different topics during that rant. But that clip has kind of made the rounds, and you know, people are talking about, you know, Tony Vitello and just his message with this group here about success. What did you think of his kind of rant there, and what do you think about the job that Tony Vitello has done with this team and how this team should be defined with success?
Yeah, I've been covering Tony since I was a student at UT, and my first year after graduation was his second year, if I'm not mistaken, off the top of my head. And so I mentioned that to say, like, nothing surprises me with Tony anymore. But even by those standards, I was still kind of sitting in the press conference, kind of looking around at everybody else like, oh, my goodness, Tony is on one right now, even by Tony Vitello's standards. And he's just a real passionate, fiery guy. He rubs people the wrong way. If you don't know him or are a fan of an opposing fan base, but the people around him, his players, his coaching staff, his former players, they adore him for that passion and that fiery nature. And did he maybe go a little bit overboard? I mean, I guess you could say so, but it is why people love playing for him and love working with him. He is passionate and fiery and wears his heart on his sleeve almost to a fault. And you saw a little bit of that with that rant. If they had lost, I mean, that's probably not the time to do that, but they didn't lose. And he was annoyed by a question that was asked by a visiting reporter the previous day, in which I don't think the reporter worded it the way that he wanted to. But I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but he essentially alluded to, like a loss to Evansville to end the season would be yet another unsuccessful season.
Yeah.
And that really rubbed Tony the wrong way. And I think what really set Tony off is it rubbed Blake Burke the wrong way. And I think if Blake Burke maybe doesn't mention anything to Tony about it or doesn't get upset about it, then maybe we don't get the Tony Vitello rant. Not that Tony liked the question either way, but I think just the fact that it bothered his players is kind of what set him off. And then there were some recruiting developments over the weekend, as he alluded to, when he called out recruits saying, hey, you're not going to come here and just get a huge bag of money. Like, you're not going to use this just for NIL money. And they had something along those lines happen with a visitor. So you pair those two things together and Tennessee just beat Evansville in pretty emphatic fashion to punch yet another ticket to Omaha. And that's why you saw him as fiery as he was. I think at this point in the season, now that they've made it to Omaha, I don't think you can call it a failure. I do think there's a little more expectations that have been placed on this team than just simply getting to Omaha. I do believe they reached the point with the program overall and this specific team. Like, you also have to do a little bit at minimum when you do get to Omaha. You can't go 0-2 or 1-2 like you have the past two trips. So you're expected to make some noise this week. So you can't call it a failure, but I do think there are still some expectations that would make it an even more successful season if they can make a little run here in Omaha.
So, Ben, to that point, they got Florida State coming up on Friday, their side of the bracket, including North Carolina, Virginia, as well as Florida State. What do you make of the draw for Tennessee in that side of the bracket?
Yeah, it's a really tough draw, but such is life at the Men's College World Series in Omaha. You're not drawing a team that does not deserve to be there. And I do think that Tennessee side is the more difficult side. I am really high on Florida State and North Carolina. I could easily see those two teams winning the national championship. I think they have a lot of star power. Florida State can really hit. It's very similar to Tennessee's offense in terms of the power. I think Tennessee may be a little deeper from top to bottom, but Florida State has some guys that if you make a mistake to them as a pitcher, they will certainly make you pay, and they can pitch it as well. And North Carolina fits that same billing, and the underrated team, I think, is Virginia. And I think just because Virginia is always just around and has had quite a bit of success in the modern college baseball era, that they kind of get forgotten about because they're not super flashy, very much like their basketball team. Now, they haven't had the losses that the basketball team has had, but just very consistent, and I think they get forgotten about. So it's a really difficult side of the bracket for Tennessee, but it's Omaha. You're trying to win a national championship. It's not going to be easy.
Well, Ben, it's going to be exciting. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning, and we're looking forward to it. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Appreciate y'all having me on, and hope y'all enjoy the rest of your week.
Absolutely. Ben McKee from GoVols 24/7, our guest here on Robbie and Rex. So Tennessee and Omaha starting this weekend. They'll take on Florida State coming up on Friday. We'll see if the Vols can make a run to potentially their first national title in college baseball. So we'll see how Tony Vitello and Tennessee handles that. Coming up next, some interesting comments from Elliot Friedman on the 32 Thoughts podcast regarding Martin Natchez and a potential trade. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Nick Keiser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Appreciate Ben McKee for being with us in the last segment. So, as we mentioned yesterday, Adam, we're getting pretty close to kind of the meat of the NHL offseason. The Cup Final going on. As soon as that's done, it's basically right into the draft and then right into free agency. So, you're going to see a lot happen over the next few weeks here in the National Hockey League. And you will see trades. You'll see, obviously, free agency go down. But, you know, we're getting close into, you know, the trade deadline is what I call trade season number one. This is trade season number two in the offseason. And you can, I mean, sometimes the offseason trades are better than the actual deadline trades. So you're going to see some action start to pick up in the National Hockey League. And a guy that we've talked about a lot is Marty Natchez from Carolina. Could the Predators be targeting Natchez? Could Natchez be a good fit here in Nashville? And could the Predators get him to come in and kind of add some youth to their lineup, but also some playmaking, some speed, and all that? Natchez, currently under contract with Carolina, and it sounds like he wants out. He has not really said anything publicly to that regard yet, but the reporting around the behind the scenes is that Natchez wants out of Carolina. Elliot Friedman had an interesting update on Natchez and kind of where things stand with him yesterday on the 32 Thoughts podcast with he and Jeff Merrick. Here's what Elliot Friedman had to say.
And I think they were kind of holding on the Natchez a little bit, but I heard that over the weekend that the Natchez stuff kind of jumped up a bit more. I heard that, a couple of guys were telling me that I think initially Carolina looked at it like worst came to worst, they could bring Natchez back next year. I think that feeling has kind of slipped away. I think there's an understanding that while Natchez hasn't said anything publicly, privately, I think he's made it pretty clear that he'd like to move on. Now they still have some time because they probably don't have to do that until the draft if they don't want to, in terms of, what they might get out of it. But, a couple guys told me that they think that Carolina has either indicated to teams you have what we want or you don't have what we want. And what some teams told me is that they're wondering if there's going to be some of those teams that were initially told by Carolina, you don't have what we want. Can they do a three-way deal and we're to try to get what Carolina wants if they want Natchez? So I just do think that picked up a little.
So that was Elliot Friedman. It sounds like from Friedman's comments there, Adam, that the Natchez stuff is starting to get boiling here a little bit. And it sounds like there's a little urgency based on Natchez wanting to get out of there. I thought a couple things about that clip there. Number one, the most interesting part about that to me was, I guess, the original thinking that if they needed to bring him back into the season and try to figure this out next season as it went along, that they were okay with doing that. And Friedman making it sound like that may no longer be the case. They may feel like they've got to get out on Natchez right now because he wants out. Okay, so you got that in the backdrop. And then number two, doing the homework of telling teams potentially that were interested in Natchez, you either have the assets that we would want back or you don't. And now maybe the idea of a three-way trade involving another team that could get the ball rolling on some teams that maybe thought they were out of it. So it sounds like to me, based on that clip, Adam, that the Marty Natchez stuff is heating up and we could see a resolution there in the next couple weeks.
Certainly sounds like it. And to clarify, he is owed a contract. He's a restricted free agent. But he does not have a contract for next season. And we've talked a lot about the potential fit for Martin Natchez with the Predators, and I like the idea of it. I think his preferred style of play and what he excels at would fit really well with an Andrew Brunette coach team. So when Martin Natchez is a good player, I think the conversations that have been bubbling up around him perhaps have inflated his value. He's a good player. Is he the type of player that puts a team like the Predators over the top? No.
No.
But he certainly helps, and he's the type of player, he's the type of player that can absolutely help a team like the Predators. He's young. He's 25. He has a 70-point season under his belt. Not this season, but last season. So there's a lot to like about Natchez. And, I think there were some reporting that the Hurricanes were looking for like a star type of player in return. And that's subjective. Like, what do the Hurricanes consider to be a star player? It doesn't have to mean the best player on your team. But I was thinking last night of recent trades involving similar players that we could use as a blueprint for what a Martin Agius deal could look like. And what's funny is the player I came up with has been traded in each of the past two summers.
Okay.
Do you have any guesses?
I'm trying to think of who's been traded the last two summers. I do not.
Alex DeBrincat.
Okay.
He was traded from Chicago to Ottawa in July of 2022.
Yep.
And traded from Ottawa to Detroit in 2023. And if I recall correctly, DeBrincat was in the same position as Natchez last summer. He was an RFA coming. He was an RFA, needed a new contract, wasn't going to re-sign with the Senators. He was traded to the Red Wings. He's from Michigan, and he signed a four-year, $31.5 million contract with the Red Wings. So that works out to a $7.875 million cap hit, according to Cap Friendly. That was me pretending to cry a little bit. So there are
RIP.
Yeah, so friendly. So here are the two trades. In July of 2022, the Blackhawks acquired a 2022 first round pick, a 2022 second round pick, and a 2024 third round pick for Alex DeBrincat. So three draft picks, one first rounder, a second rounder, and a third rounder for DeBrincat. Last summer, the Senators acquired Dominik Kubalik, who at that point, I believe, was 4 years into his career. Solid player, like third line guy, probably. You know, had, I think, 30 goals in his first season with the Blackhawks, was a Calder Trophy finalist. I think this is a defensive prospect by the name of Donovan Sobrango. I'm hoping I'm getting that right. A 2024 fourth round pick and a 2024 first round conditional pick.
Yep.
So a roster player in Kubalik, not a great player, but a solid player who can play in your lineup every night. And Kubalik, I believe, was in the lineup regularly for the Senators this past season. Yes, he played in 74 games. So a roster player, a prospect. I don't think Sobrango – I looked this up in the Athletics 2023 Red Wings prospect rankings. He was like 10th or 11th.
Yep.
So not like not your best prospect, but when a top 10 prospect, a fourth-round pick and a first-round pick. So if you're the Predators and you're putting together a similar package as the one that Ottawa put together, or excuse me, Detroit put together to get DeBrincat from Ottawa, they have those picks. You know, they have plenty of draft picks. You can choose whichever draft picks you want. Which roster player and which prospect would you throw in there that would be equivalent to what the Senators acquired for?
Yeah, it's a good question. My follow-up to that would be like, would that even be necessary? Because I mean, if I'm the Predators and DeBrincat is the comp they want to throw out there, my response to that would be, well, before he got traded from Chicago, he had 240 goal seasons and 275 point seasons.
Yes.
Natchez doesn't have that.
That is true.
He was 24 at the time he got traded. And also, like, Carolina doesn't have leverage here, right? Like, there's clearly he wants out.
Well, Ottawa didn't really have
leverage. Ottawa didn't have leverage either.
Ottawa
didn't
have leverage either.
But, like, you can make the argument for DeBrincat, 240 goal seasons at the time, a couple of 70 point years, that he should be of higher value than Natchez. Not a ton. Like, Natchez is a good player, clearly, but that to me is the interesting part of all this, is like Carolina wanting a star player back. They're not going to get that. Like, right? Like, why would, if I'm a team looking at this, why would I do that for Marty Natchez in the situation that he's in right now?
I mean, that's a good question, and it's funny, as it didn't occur to me until now when I was thinking of DeBrincat more of like the type of player, the age, but it occurred to me as we were going through the proposal here that the situations are similar, which I think
they
makes
are.
This an interesting comparison, because DeBrincat, as I said, like Natchez, was a restricted free agent who was not planning on re-signing with the Senators. So it's a similar situation.
Yeah.
Natchez is an RFA who reportedly is not interested in re-signing with the Hurricanes. But you're right. DeBrincat, from a purely goals and points standpoint, a more productive player at that stage of his career than Natchez is.
So let me ask you this. What do you think the draft capital that you spoke about, Dante Fabro and Igor Afanasyev, is that enough?
That's a good question. I mean, Fabro, you get an experienced young defenseman in Favreau who can play in your lineup.
And they're going to need a defenseman because they're not keeping all the UFAs they got.
Like, I've seen some proposals out of Vancouver, Natchez for Filip Hronek.
Yeah.
I think Hronek also needs – I think he needs a new contract too. He might also be an RFA.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I mean, on the surface, my guess would be Carolina wouldn't go for that.
What if the roster player is – what if the roster player is Tommy Novak?
I mean, look, I would probably be in favor of that. I'm
because
not
Natchez
as high.
Can play, I believe Natchez can play center.
He can. He can play center.
He's played mostly wing, I think, in Carolina. Yeah. But I think he can play center.
He can play center.
So if you trade them Novak and Natchez replaces Novak as your, you know, potential second line center.
Yeah. Now the question would be there, are you taking, like, are you like, Natchez is a better player than Novak.
Correct.
I think we can all agree with that.
Yes.
But I think in an ideal world, you would like to have Natchez play with somebody like Novak,
yes,
right, and add to it rather than
I think that's what Alex Stardi was talking about with us yesterday.
Right. So, like, it, you know, on the surface, I can see where if you're the Predators, you don't want to do that. Now, part of this discussion is going to lead to a rant that I have later at 7:45. So, looking forward to that.
The other thing too is because of the draft capital that the Predators have. I don't know what the Red Wings draft pick situation was last year when they made that deal.
You're not an expert on the Red Wings prospect pool?
I am not, unfortunately. But because of the value of the picks the Predators have, perhaps if you add better draft picks or more draft picks, you can the level of the prospect or the roster player can be lower.
Yeah.
Like, I agree. Like, Dante Fabro, I'm not sure gets that done. But if you're giving them 2 second-round picks or a second-round pick and a first-round pick next year or something like that,
it makes it a little more palatable.
It makes it a little bit more palatable. So that's why we talked about this yesterday. Like, what are the Predators' best assets for trading if UC Saros is not available?
Right.
And you mentioned the draft picks, and I would agree with that. So in a potential deal for Natchez, maybe the roster player you give up is not a quote-unquote star player, but you're giving them ample draft capital and good draft picks, and that sort of balances it out.
Well, that leads me to another question for a potential trade chip on the Natchez front that I want to get to your thoughts on coming up next. We'll take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers on the road. Pregame at 10:50, first pitch at 11:05. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vinken here, talking Predators and the trade market. So, on the Marty Natchez front, Adam, let's discuss this scenario. Let's say the Predators, as we sit here today on June the 12th, are feeling pretty good about discussions with UC Saros and that an extension is coming. And we talked about it yesterday. It does feel like, based on Barry Trotz's comments at the end of the year and some of the reporting around it, that a Saros extension is coming at some point. Maybe it's July 1st. Maybe it's not. Maybe it goes into next season. But it feels like the intention for the Predators is to sign UC Saros to a contract extension. So with that kind of in the background, how would a Yaroslav Askarov factor into a Natchez trade? Could that be an avenue the Predators explore? If he is included, how would that affect the price in terms of what the Predators would be willing to give up? Because one thing I will say, Carolina, as good as they've been, one thing they've not had is a franchise goalie. And, you know, that doesn't – Askarov doesn't really help them in that with the immediate future, but he could help them with that long-term How could Askarov factor into the Natchez discussion, in your opinion?
It is a good question, because you're right. Carolina, you know, for how good they are as a team defensively, you know, they've gone through a lot of goaltenders.
Yeah.
You know, currently they have Frederik Andersen, who missed a lot of the season with a blood clotting issue. They have, you know, Pyotr Kochetkov. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. You know, a young goalie who's played a lot of games, shows a lot of promise. But I believe this is the final year of Andersen's contract, and who knows if those health issues will crop up again. Hopefully not. Blood clotting is a very scary thing. I was reading a story recently in The Athletic from Fluto Shinzawa, who covers the Boston Bruins, and the headline is, could a Linus Ullmark Martin Natchez trade happen? Because I think that was – I don't know if those conversations actually happened. I feel like Elliot Friedman and Jeff Marek talked about it. Like, I think Marek floated the idea of Ullmark for Natchez.
Yeah.
And it is a good question. Perhaps. I mean, if Kochetkov is their goaltender of the future, it certainly helps to have another young goaltender there just in case.
I don't think it would be a – like, I'm not talking Askarov straight up.
No, it would be like part of the deal.
Right.
If he is the centerpiece of the deal, I'm not sure if that moves the needle one way or the other. Like, I think it would help, but like, if you're presenting a package to the Hurricanes where it's Askarov, X prospect, X draft pick.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. I think the Hurricanes, you know, the Hurricanes could use, I think, I don't know what their pipeline is underneath Kochetkov. So if they move on from Andersen after this coming season, and it's Kochetkov and Askarov, you know, that's a lot of personality in the crease. Kochetkov has quite the personality,
too. He
does.
Carolina, they've been a really good team for a long time now at this point. They have not been able to break through in the postseason, which is why I think you're about to see – I mean, you're already seeing changes take place. They've got a new general manager. So you've got a new GM coming in. They've signed Brenda Moore to an extension. The roster's going to look different. They've got some UFAs coming up with defensemen. They have been, and I think you would agree with this, pretty blessed with they've had a deep, good defense core for a while in Carolina.
Yes.
So, you know, Brett Pesce is a free agent coming up. Brady Shea is a free agent coming up. They're going to have some changes on the back end there.
Let's talk about how deep for a second, just to give you context of how deep that defensive core has been. There was a point where Gustav Forsling,
yep,
who is starring for the Panthers on their shutdown pair in the Stanley Cup playoffs and, you know, has had a breakout postseason, could not crack that lineup.
Yeah.
He was traded from Chicago to Carolina and then played an entire season in the American League.
Yeah.
Because he could not crack that defensive roster. And now look where he is. Now it doesn't always work out that way. But a defenseman the caliber of Gustav Forsling, who's been a key part of the Panthers' potential run to the Stanley Cup, two wins away, could not crack that Hurricanes lineup.
So I say all that to say, like, if I'm Carolina, my assumption is Carolina believes that with a few tweaks, they're still right there with a chance to compete for a Stanley Cup.
Yes.
So how does that influence what the return for Natchez, what return would be acceptable for them? You know, would Askarov, like the deal being centered around Askarov and draft picks, be enough? And if it's not enough, like the roster player part of this, like we had the Evangelista discussion yesterday. You bring up Novak. Like, would you be willing, if you're Trotz, to package together either one of those two guys or, you know, one of your higher level prospects to bring in Natchez? Because look, I'm with Natchez. Is not a superstar player. He's a really good player. And I think he certainly could help. And look, I mean, the hope would be that if given more opportunity and given more responsibility in Nashville, that he could be closer to the 70-point guy on a yearly basis than he is the 53-point guy. Again, not that there's anything wrong with 53 points, but you'd like it to be 71, 75, somewhere in that neighborhood. So, like Carolina's perspective on this and how close they think they are and the changes that they have to make this offseason, like everybody agrees they got to make some changes because the same formula they keep trotting out of there is not working in the playoffs. But how many changes do they feel like they have to make, and how does that influence what the return for Natchez looks like?
Yeah, I think it sounds like Carolina wants someone who will fill the void left by Natchez.
Yeah.
Like a prospect, I'm sure a prospect or prospects in the deal is fine, but I think they want someone that they can put it in the lineup and know that that position is covered. And
do the Predators have that?
I think there might be only one player on their roster that I think would fill that void for Carolina, and I think it's Luke Evangelista.
Yeah.
I really do. And I understand why Predators fans would be hesitant to trade Luke Evangelista. He's young. He's the one young player that so far has become an everyday NHL player. He has shown a lot of promise. But what would bring me more, I don't know, comfort is not the right word, but it's not like they're trading Evangelista, who's 22, for a player who's 29.
Yeah.
You're trading him for a player who, you know, we're pretending to trade him for a player who's 25. So so a player that's in his prime, that has played in the league for several years, that's been productive in the league. And I kind of go back to what I said yesterday, and I know it's not a perfect comparison. I know it's a new regime in terms of the coaching, even though the previous coach is now the GM. But the Predators' history of developing and drafting forwards is not an illustrious list. And I understand it's probably unfair to Luke Evangelista to say, well, he's just going to end up like all the others. It's going to be Craig Smith and Colin Wilson and, you know, those guys again.
Yeah.
But it's just, there's a lot of history to suggest that those types of players in this environment don't pop the way they do in other places. So it's like, do you take the chance on Evangelista finally breaking that mold, so, you know, and becoming a top line player? Or do you say, look, he's a young player, he's shown promise, you know, you got to give up something to get something. Natchez is an established player. Let's bring him in here. Like that, I mean, I really do think that in order to get if Saros is off the table, I think in order to get a player of Natchez's caliber or higher, it may involve trading Luke Evangelista.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point. We'll continue this discussion and a problem that I have with some of the conversation around this in the Rob Rant coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Hello, I love it there. Till I'm victorious. It's so stupid. It's a terrible song.
It is time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road with the gloriousness of Joe Rex Road singing in the background. Always beautiful to have Rex Road and his vocal talent involved in some way. Adam's frozen when thought.
I'm just taken aback by Joe's attempt at singing. I know that he was trying to make fun of the song.
Yeah.
I mean, this song does great on me in a way that it didn't 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah. By the way, hard to believe. Not that this is my rant. We'll get to that here in just a second. 7 years ago yesterday was when the Predators lost in Game 6 to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Seven years ago yesterday?
Yeah.
Kieser was 5 years old at the time.
Hey. All right.
I was graduating. I was like high school graduate.
There you go.
When that happened.
Class of 2017?
Class of 2017.
How about that?
Yep. I was talking about the finals at graduation. Hey guys, I think we'll make it.
I don't like hearing that he graduated high school 6 years after I graduated college. Like, I don't.
Well, you're old as dirt.
That's wild.
I am old as dirt.
Adam, you did go to the same college as my cousin.
Uh-oh.
That he just graduated from. Woo. So I have some affiliation with American, plus right. You and my cousin.
Right? It's not an American university. It's
the
American.
The American University.
Take that, Ohio State.
All right, so we're discussing, you know, the trade market for the Predators. And this is not a Predators fan specific rant, it's a fan in general rant. And believe me, I've been in the shoes. I've been in the same spot, so I get it. But we got a couple of texts yesterday when we were discussing Evangelista maybe being a part of the Natchez trade. And just throwing it out there. My point was, like, I don't want to trade Luke Evangelista either, right? Like, Luke Evangelista right now is the one young forward they have that I feel pretty darn good about moving forward. Not that they can't have others. Like, we'll see about, you know, Svechkov, and we'll see about Kimmel and LaRue and those guys coming up. But I just don't know yet. I'm not seeing them play at the NHL level. Like, I feel pretty good about Luke Evangelista and his trajectory. Maybe not to be a superstar player, but I feel like he's going to be a pretty good, pretty productive player for them moving forward. So I don't want to trade him either. But some of the texts we got yesterday of, like, they shouldn't trade any roster player. Like, they shouldn't trade any of their prospects. They should use the draft. They got a ton of draft picks. Just trade the draft picks. And, like, in a perfect world, I agree with that. But the problem is, like, you got to – if you're going to get somebody like Natchez, you're probably going to have to give up something that you don't want to give up. That's how trades work in the National Hockey League. And I feel like too often – a couple of things happen in trade discussions. Either people that are closely associated with the team and fans of the team overvalue the players that they have to the point where, like, oh, well, who wouldn't want Dante Fabbroe? You could get Dante Fabbroe and trade him straight up for Connor McDavid. Who wouldn't want Dante Fabbroe? Or they overvalue their players to the point of, oh, we can't get rid of that guy. We can't do it. Can't get rid of that guy. I'm like, guys, like, again, I'm not advocating for a trade of Luke Evangelista. But if you told me today that they traded Luke Evangelista and, like, another mid-round pick or something and got Natchez back, would I be angry about it? No. Like, I think Natchez is a good player. So I understand that you don't want to give up some of these guys. But in professional sports, particularly, like, the NFL is different because there's just not a lot of trades that happen in the NFL. But in the NBA... in Major League Baseball, certainly in hockey, a lot of times you got to give up something to get something. And that's a discussion that I think gets lost too much here of, I don't want to give up this guy, I don't want to give up that guy. Well, do you want to make a trade or do you not? Like, that's basically what it boils down to me. So, again, I'm not advocating for Luke Evangelista trade, just people dismissing it out of hand and not wanting to give up anybody and thinking you're just going to get a guy like Marty Natchez for a third-round pick. I'm here to tell you, it's not going to happen.
I definitely agree with the idea of fans and people around the team, media and such, overvaluing the players they see on a regular basis. And I, you know, as Jared likes to say when we have these conversations, other teams don't want your bad players.
Yeah.
So it's easy to say, let's trade. I feel like there was, before they bought him out, there were a lot of trade proposals by Predators fans that involved getting a really good player for Matt Duchene.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not going to happen.
Right.
Matt Duchene hasn't been playing well. He has a big contract. You're not getting whatever player it was for Matt Duchene.
Right.
You have to give up something of value to get something of value. And that's where Evangelista thing, you know, sticks out. I understand Predators fans really like Luke Evangelista.
For sure. Should.
He seems like a really, really nice kid. I haven't met
he's
him.
He's got a little personality
he's
to
got,
him. Like,
yeah.
He's a fun kid.
He has
yeah.
excellent hair. I've
he
seen
does.
That.
Pretty boy Vincenzo.
He does.
Who calls him that?
That's his gamer tag, and the guys in the locker room call him that.
Yeah. Oh, boy. There was also something about he had a Louis Vuitton belt or something.
Yeah.
Like, that was
yes.
the whole
thing. There's a lot to like about Evangelista.
Yeah, and I like him as a player. I think I like the way he plays the game. As you mentioned, he seems to have that, you know, swagger when he's on the ice. You need players like that. I completely understand why Predators fans would not want to give up a player like Luke Evangelista in a potential trade. But if you're the team on the other side, think about what Elliot said in that clip we played.
Yep.
If the Hurricanes are going around saying, hey, you've got something we want. So if you're interested in Martin Natchez, let's talk.
Yep.
And then if it's Barry Trotz and they say, and Barry Trotz says, all right, who are you interested in? They're probably going to say Luke Evangelista or yep. something or someone
at least
else.
Involved in there. Yeah.
Right. And that's just what has to happen. You know,
doesn't mean you have to do it. Like that doesn't mean like if you're Barry Trotz, you don't have to do that. But like the idea that you can go acquire a quote unquote big boy forward that we've talked about without giving up something of pretty good value, like it just doesn't happen in the NHL. Or at least if it does, very rarely, where somebody just gets fleeced that way.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, for example, okay, this popped up on my feed. This is from a Maple Leafs fan.
Okay.
That quote tweeted the Predators' announcement last month that they had traded Ryan McDonagh.
Yeah.
This was his trade proposal for Mitch Marner.
Okay.
UC Saros, Philip Tomasino, a 2024 first-round pick, Tanner Mullendijk, and one of Kemmel, Wood, or Evangelista for Mitch Marner.
That's
a lot. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 assets for one player.
Yeah.
And look, Marner, we've talked about this a lot. Marner is an excellent player. I'm sorry.
He's not worth that.
No, like very few, if any, players are worth that.
Yeah.
So like that's exactly what we're talking about. This Maple Leafs fan has, I mean, I know Marner's a good player.
It's not reality.
Yeah. So, I mean, if the Predators are going to make the type of deal that gets them a player like Martin Natchez or gets them, we talked about the Devils apparently being willing to move off of the number 10 pick in the draft. If you are going to get a premium asset, you're going to have to give something back that's also of value. And I know all of the teenage girls will be very upset if Luke Evangelista gets traded. I hear you, man.
Right here.
He's got great hair, seems like a cool kid, good-looking kid, making some money right now. If you're an 18 to 21-year-old girl, he's right in your wheelhouse. And as a hockey player, he's a promising hockey player. But, yeah, this idea that, oh, we can go get Martin Natchez or whatever player, and we'll give you a third-round pick, a seventh-round pick, and Michael McCarron. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Jill Jelinek from Fox 17, who has been out at Titans minicamp and OTAs. We'll get her thoughts on the state of the Titans heading into this season. That's next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.